Radio.
Tips for casting the social media net. A talk by Father Roderick von Hogan and Ryan Eggenberger at CNMC Melbourne 2013.
So since you are all familiar already with Facebook, Twitter, and some of you Pinterest, we figured the best way to approach this is to share with you the things that we've discovered over the years that we've been involved in social media. And some of those things might be very familiar to you. Others might be new. It might give you some ideas. And we originally planned a Q&A session of about 15 minutes. But since we're having to condense our talk a little bit, we're going to do it differently. If you have something to a question, something you don't understand because, of course, our accents.
I can translate.
Don't hesitate to ask James to translate it. And if you have something to add to it or an experience or whatever, don't hesitate to interrupt. So Ryan has made a beautiful structure. I'm more very eclectic in the way that I approach this, so I just made random notes, but he actually gave it some thought. So, Ryan, why don't you just introduce these, 30 tips for more effective social communications?
Sure. Thank you, Father. I appreciate it. So I just want to jump right in since we don't have too much time. One thing, I'm just going to talk from experience in helping organizations, nonprofits, for-profits, parishes, people. On stuff that when I'm asked for help, aspects that people haven't really thought of. So one thing we're just really going to run through some tips. First one, don't forget that you can create a monthly and daily plan for your social media, especially regarding Facebook and Twitter, which I think is where we're really going to focus a lot of our time is Facebook and Twitter, particularly with parishes and a couple nonprofits I'm working with right now. Social media can take up so much of one's time if you're the staff, anyone here like the actual person running a social media for, it's time to sit down and think, it's 8 o'clock today, it's, Monday morning, what am I right, if you sit down at the beginning of the month, or the beginning of the week on Monday morning or even Friday of the week past, you can actually say Monday at 8 o'clock, at 12 o'clock and at 4 o'clock, I'm going to schedule a post about something, 8 o'clock, something that happened over the weekend, 12 o'clock, a Bible verse, 4 o'clock, a question, interactive question. What's going to be part of that? This is going to have a picture. This one's going to have a link. This one's going to have whatever. We all know if you have a business page on Facebook, you can pre-schedule posts. So if you're at home on Saturday and have some downtime, you can get a lot of Monday's work done ahead of time. You can go ahead and pre-schedule that. With the power of pre-scheduling, in addition, you can actually create a campaign for the week, for the month. If you're going to be out of town for a week, you can pre-schedule ahead. You sit down with your communications director or your company president and say, it was September 1st is yesterday, right? So ideally, last week or the week before in August, we would have been planning out what do we want to accomplish on social media in September? What initiatives do we have? And you can actually just plan out the entire the entire month in advance. I'm a huge planner. I like to know what's coming. I know what's going to be posting, in 3 weeks at 3 o'clock on Thursday with some of my organizations that help consult. So be ahead. So you're not sitting down on Monday, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. I don't know.
Well, I'm the total opposite of you. I'm not a planner at all. I'm very impulsive, and whenever I don't care in which time zone I am. I just tweet or put stuff on Facebook, and then it's up to my followers to figure out where I am in the world. I've been using a very interesting tool to do exactly what you described, Ryan, and that is to automatically post a couple of things because I'm working with various time zones. And since you're all, in the more or less English-speaking part of the world. Now you're speaking English, right? Most of you. you always got to be aware that you might have an international audience. I know that many people are following Archbishop Porteous on Twitter that are not part of Australia or New Zealand, for that matter, but they just are interested in a bishop that is active in social media. And so if you're only posting in your own time zone, especially with Twitter, where these updates just go by so quickly, you might actually want to schedule some posts automatically for a different time zones. And one service that I can recommend is Buffer app. So it's Buffer app, double P. It's not an app. Actually, they do have an app, but it's more a service. And what they do is you type in your Twitter account, and they will do an analysis of your followers, and they will show you which time zones they are in and how many people, you know, what the most likely moments of the day are that people will actually see your tweet. And that can even be important in your own time zone, because not everyone is looking at their Twitter feed all the time. Some people are, but I'm not sure if you want them to follow you, because they might be these, you know, the people that the Archbishop talked about that are just walking into lampposts because they're constantly watching their mobile device. But a lot of people will go on Twitter right after lunch, or, you know, the moment they wake up. And so it will show you exactly when the best times are to post, and you can schedule your tweets. And you can either do that on, you know, like every time, like 1 minute past one, I want a tweet to be posted, and you just put them in a queue. Or you can even do that individually for certain, you know, like a blog post. You want it to go online immediately at that point. Hootsuite is another service that you can use for that. It's called Hootsuite. I prefer Buffer app, to be honest.
I prefer Hootsuite.
All right. Well, so there you go. You say tomato, I say tomato. No, the other way around.
Right.
And my only warning would be, or tip is, don't overuse it. Make sure that, especially if you use it to cross-post to both Facebook and Twitter, my general rule of thumb is, if you are not planning on being active or interactive in a certain social network, don't post there. It's like, you know, like you're advertising, I've got coffee and cookies, please come in, and people enter your house and there's nobody there to have that coffee with you. Choose your networks. Nobody expects us to be everywhere. Only Padre Pio could pull that off. But don't try to be like him in that respect, because you will not succeed. I would say don't overuse it. Make sure that you, in addition to what you schedule, you also interact. After all, it's a social network, so be social.
Exactly. So, you know, one organization I assist, they pre-schedule everything before noon, and then the social media person sits down in the afternoon and posts something relevant to the day. So they do have an entire month or two scheduled in advance on stuff that's really not necessarily timely, like links back to their website, have you checked out our latest YouTube video, stuff like that. And it keeps the persona person and, you know, the current relevancy. The other part of it is, if something happens where they get too busy, something's still posted that day, which is key, because you don't want to lose the consistency. Okay.
Right. Related to that, another tip would be to avoid what I call the Santa Claus problem. I actually don't know about the Santa Claus tradition here in this part of the world, since it's such a time warp for me, and also in terms of weather. But do kids write to Santa Claus?
Yes.
All right. Oh, okay. He's still on the North Pole. You know, the big problem, of course, of that is Santa Claus will never read it, because the poor fellow, you know, is no longer there to open the mail.
What?
What do you mean?
Hang on. Revelations. Just a spoiler alert. You know?
I apologize. I always keep forgetting that you're from New Zealand. But, you know, just Google Santa Claus, and you'll get the... Yeah. But and this is important for those of you that might be posting on someone else's behalf. That happens. I mean, not every bishop/pope has time to be on his cell phone all the time. And so sometimes they would just ask someone to post on their behalf. Well, what I would recommend is still make sure that the person on whose behalf you are posting, whether it is Santa Claus or your local bishop, knows what you are posting. I know that the people in the Vatican, every morning, it's one of the sessions that they have with the Pope, they will actually show him, this is what we're going to tweet in your name. So, well, they might not do all the languages, you know, and in Spanish we're going to say, hola. But he is aware of what he is tweeting. So it's not just someone just making up tweets as, you know, well, like Santa Claus. And also, they show him from time to time some of the responses, you know, some of the feedback, both the negative and the positive. And I think that's important too. You want to keep the person that you're representing online in the loop. And I would say one final tip is, sometimes ask the person you're representing to personally reply to someone, or do what Pope Francis has been doing lately during his summer holiday. Just pick up the phone, call someone. Yeah. It can change a life. It will cost you 5 minutes, but it will change that person's life. So just, again, involve people in this social networking. And don't, you don't want your bishop to be Kermit the Frog, the puppet. You want that puppet, that person to be really involved, and not just be, you know, you speaking in his voice. All right.
I heard a quote once from a social media expert, Ted Rubin, in the United States, and he said something like this. If the way you treat people online would get you a punch in real life, you have a problem. So remember that the follower is a person, and this is really goes back to our Catholic teaching on dignity of the human person. A follower is a human being, unless it's a spam robot or something. And, you know, and the way you treat people online, you know, you can't just ignore them. It's really important. On the lines of having people represent you, talking about your social media team, building that for your organization. Some of us might be members of that if you ever get assistance, or if maybe you're just thinking about building a social media team. One thing you really want to think about is, a couple things, the voice of your page and the character of the person who is going to be representing the organization, the parish, or yourself. I insist always, with discrimination and all this stuff, with discriminatory laws and everything, do as much as you can to ensure that the person doing this job is a faithful Catholic who attempts to go to Mass every day if possible, and who is faithful to the teachings of the Church on all levels. If you're running a Catholic organization, maybe not everyone's doing that. I think that's almost key to be said. Other characteristics to look for in your social media person, proper grammar. Are they sociable in regular life, in real life? Can they make friends? Do they have friends? Are they awkward? Can you carry a conversation with them? It's social media. It's a media to provide social, responsibilities, just the services. So that's important.
Yeah. A related tip would be not to let the institution in social networks talk like a human being. And I mean that I often get logos talking to me in a personal way, which is really weird. There's this newspaper in the Netherlands, and they have a religious section, and they have their own Twitter feed. And that Twitter feed will go and disagree with people and say, I don't agree with what you're saying. And I was like, who is talking to me? Who is this person behind the logo? I don't know. I think the better way to approach this is to have the official organizational feed post the news updates, you know, keep people informed, and to have ambassadors, people that work in your organization, have a personal identity in social networks, but that are still aware that they are speaking on behalf or in the context of their organization. And I work for a Catholic broadcasting organization, and we've got very clear rules about what we post and what we cannot post in social networks. And it's very important to be prudent. It's not that you have to, you know, kind of always double check the things you're posting, but, you know, it has to retain a certain amount of spontaneity. But you don't want someone who's working for your organization and is associated with your diocese or whatever it is to go, you know, ranting against whoever or behaving unsocially online. So I think it's very important to think this through with the people that are the faces of your organization.
I think a really great exercise to do with your organization, with your team, with the president of your organization, is to actually sit down and write out in paper or on a Google Doc or whatever a strategy. Mm-hmm. What tools will you use? What social media platforms are you going to use for your organization? How will you deal with negative comments? How will you deal with positive comments? If you get a negative comment relating to this, what content needs to be taken one level above the social media manager to the president or whomever? Get some very clear guidelines so that there's really no questions asked. No questions that go unanswered in regards to all these questions. And I think it's a great exercise. I sat down one time. I thought it was going to take one page. I ended up with like 10 pages or something. But it was a really good exercise even for me as the social media manager of that particular organization at the time.
Now, we've been talking a lot about using social networks in an organizational context, but I know that a lot of you are also using this or solely using this on a personal level. And so perhaps it could be a good moment to share some of those tips. What if you're using Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Google Plus, in your own, you know, your family, group of family and friends? One of the biggest mistakes that I made when I started to use Facebook and Twitter was I would befriend anyone. Like anyone who asked to be my friend, like, sure, you can be my friend, I will be your friend. And in no time, I had 5,000 friends with this, I think 4,999 friends is the limit for Facebook, which means that anyone else who wants to be your friend gets this message, like, Father Roderick doesn't want to be your friend. The pastoral dramas that like letters like that. Why? I've been following and listening to your podcast every day, and you don't want to be my friend.
I was that guy 5 years ago, I think.
Oh, gosh. I apologize.
It's okay.
And actually, it made these social networks totally irrelevant for me, because you would open your Facebook page, and you would see, like, thousands of new updates. And what's more, I was also following a lot of people that I didn't even realize, I didn't even know why I was following them, especially Catholics. It's very weird, but I followed a lot of, followed tons of Catholics that were following me, and I discovered that Catholics have a very common behavior on Facebook most of the time, also on Twitter, and that is to post pious pictures. I mean, like, tons and tons of pious pictures of saints in all sorts of sugary context with colors that, it's really difficult to interact with pious pictures. And it actually was a wake-up call for me. I was like, am I doing that too? You know, am I that guy who always quotes Therese of Avila and you know, is trying to be this very holy person on the web? And so in order to make it real again, and this relates to what you said, Ryan, as well. You know, treat people in social networks the way you would treat your friends. Make it human again. So I had to unfriend a lot of people. I did send out tons of messages about, you know, this does not mean that I will never see you again and that I don't love you. But and I restricted my Facebook people to about 300. And Twitter, kind of the same. And I think even psychologically, it's kind of the maximum amount of friends that you can keep track of, more or less. And anything else becomes just a friend on paper. It's like those parishioners on paper that you never see in church. You know that they're out there, but they don't care about you. And, well, you should care about them and pray for them. So it's a very, and I guess it's probably the same with the work you do in social networks and your presence online. You've got way more people following you than you can follow back. But you can still interact with them because they will comment. They will leave your, and then you comment back and you thank them for their comments. But it's just, you know, the amount of people that you follow, just keep it limited so they stay relevant. And so my rule of thumb is I only follow people that I really know, that I've met in real life or that I've been following for a long time, and I feel that I have this personal connection. And there is a small percentage of other people that I follow, and those are the celebrities. Archbishop Porteous, for instance. And now I consider you to be, you know, in my inner circle of friends. But... But feel free to unfriend me anytime.
Go ahead. So I don't have the same problem. I'm not as well known as Father Roderick on Facebook, but I do have a personal Facebook, policy, where I don't friend people on Facebook that I don't know in real life or may haven't met in real life. Twitter's different for me. I don't have the same policy as you do on Twitter. Very different purposes for that. But Twitter has tools that Facebook doesn't. And I also am way more transparent personally on Facebook than Twitter. So that's why. Twitter has a lot of organization tools like lists, which I do, and I use several lists for work purposes. So it's a little bit different in that regard. Was there anything more on the personal level you wanted to address?
Before I go back? Well, just the point you raised about criticism, that also happens to you right. Personally. We've got a question there, too. So there are a lot of people that use personal accounts on Facebook to represent their company. And I think I would follow the indications that Facebook gives you. You need to have an owner of that page, but that ownership can change. But I would definitely recommend using a page, especially because Facebook will offer you a lot of statistical information if you do that. So you have much better idea of how people are consuming the content that you post. So for the for the criticism, people might sometimes lash out, and even your friends might be sometimes in a bad mood and just, you know, react very strongly. My advice in that case would be what I call the Bambi advice. I don't know if you've seen Bambi lately. It's been out there for a while. there's this moment that Thumper is making fun of young Bambi because he's awkward and he's clumsy. And then the mother of Thumper takes him aside and tells him, if you ain't got something nice to say, better say nothing at all. And that has become my motto on social networks, especially because I'm a priest, but also, you know, I'm a Catholic. We are positive people. We reinforce, we motivate, we encourage. We love. We don't hate. We shouldn't. And so the moment that I feel hurt, my human reaction is to lash back, to defend yourself. And I've learned that it usually only creates more trouble than it's worth. And so I was like, okay, I'm just not. And then let alone posting rants. You know, you've got some people that every morning you wake up, you check your Twitter feed, and there are complaints of people. Oh, today I feel terrible, even worse than yesterday. And I have to go to work. I hate my work. And, you know, after seeing that for a while, you're like, why am I following this person? It's not helping me. It's not. And then I would say just step away from negativity. And if people are really abusing the freedom that they have, the trolls, the anonymous people, and this is true for both personal accounts and organizational accounts, block. If people cross a line, the line is there to, and you have to protect it. Doesn't mean you have to go bomb that person's house, by the way. But pray for that person, but still block that person. Protect you and your followers against abuse. I think that's very important. It's what Pope Benedict said about our role as Catholics on the internet. He said we have to create safe and friendly environments for dialogue, and that means we protect that, because otherwise people don't feel safe, and the friendliness turns into an open war.
More on that. Three great examples, all in the same industry, that handle negative comments really, really well, and any organization here might learn from, is Virgin Australia, Southwest Airlines, and JetBlue Airlines. If you go to their Twitter page, the way they handle negativity is phenomenal. And I think any organization or person, they use all these principles that you just said.
All right.
You know, it's for the airlines. It's fantastic. So three great examples to check out as an example for your organization. Negative comments.
Can we test them?
You'll probably get blocked or something.
So, question on the front row.
Yeah, the question you always have to ask yourself before updating your feed or even posting a blog is: put yourself in your desired audience, the people that are following you. What would be relevant to them, and what is something that I cherish and find extremely valuable for my life? How can I translate that so that they can at least understand why I'm so passionate about it, which means sometimes you have to forego on the holy pictures, because it might be, or you know, there are a lot of pro-life people, and I'm grateful for that and thankful. However, sometimes I wonder if just posting all these very graphic photos to have this shock effect works. And I can tell you, for me, it does not work. I'm having breakfast and it's like, oh, it's terrible. And so I would say one of the ways in which you can evangelize is by beauty. It's by just and also by being yourself, and try to be as diverse as possible. Post the stuff that is relevant to your friends, so that they know that you're still, despite the fact that you're a Catholic, you're still a normal human being. And then also sometimes update things like, I don't know, a link of this homily here online, it touched me so much, and I like this phrase in there. Here's a link if you want, but I would say always be respectful to your friends that might not be Catholic, and if there's anything that could turn them away from the church because it's like too much, I'd say tone it down a little bit for their sake. So it's finding that balance. I know it's not a an easy answer, but I think over time you get to know your friends and you know what they can stomach and what not.
I've used a very specific approach to my personal Facebook page, and it's to show and to market, more or less, that following Jesus, being his disciple, or attempting to be his disciple more and more, is more. It's better life. It's more peaceful. It's especially more joyful. And I've used that because I come from, you know, I don't have all Catholic friends either. And so what inevitably happens after, you know, 2 or 3 years of doing this, I use 2 or 3 hashtags in Facebook, even Grace Upon Grace and Abundant Life. And that's attractive to people who don't know the Lord, because I think that's, you know, a lot of them couldn't say that that's what their experience of life is like so far. A lot of them. And I know that because I get messages from a lot of people who have been drinking way late at night, who, you know, I've been away, Ryan, I see, like, you're always posting about how great life is, being Catholic, da-da-da-da-da. I hate God. Can we get coffee tomorrow or something like that? And sure. And then you try for weeks and weeks. They, you know, they message you when they were drinking heavily or something. So they're reluctant, but eventually get to them. And so it provides, at least on my personal Facebook page, again, just the joyful witness. Yeah, is what I personally try to do. And it seems to work.
Joy is a key word in there. It's something that Pope Francis keeps emphasizing all the time. Be joyful. And what is it with these Catholics that always walk around as if they just were fired? Except if you're fired, you know, then you can walk around like that. But you know, we're supposed to have a joyful faith. It's what many people from other religions envy. It's that we're so joyful. Well, show that in the way you interact with them in social networks, and have some fun, some goofiness in moderation. Does not hurt your reputation. I have let's anonymize this a little bit. I know someone who is very aware of his presence or her presence or its presence on Facebook. And whenever he, she, or it is in my vicinity and sees that I'm taking pictures, the first thing he, she, or it asks me is, you're not going to put that on Facebook, right? Because I don't want... And if you go to that person's or entity's Facebook page, it is extremely... It's streamlined, it's composed. And I told that entity... many times that the person that I see here on Facebook, that's not you. I don't know. It's like an idealized version of you, but it's not you. And my advice to that person, entity, or a random alien would be, lighten up a bit. You know, lighten up. It's not wrong to incidentally post a photo of your Tim Tam carrot cake. People will still take you seriously from time to time.
That's not a bad idea.
and I think it's actually that mix of, you know, it's like what Jesus communicated. He was not just preaching theology. He told stories. He did things with people. I mean, it was a whole mix of different ways in which he interacted, and all that together creates a picture, a full picture. And that's what it's like in a church. You know, you've got windows, statues, music, frankincense, choirs, singing priests, dancing bishops in some parts of the world. Not where you live, but in Rio there were some. But and all that together, you know, it forms, people will balance it out. So don't hesitate to you know, have some fun online as well. That's part of being social, right?
So any questions at this point?
For organizations that are resistant to social media and new technology in general? A website with nothing on it.
Yes. They do realize that they need a Facebook page or a website, but they don't really want to interact socially. Very good question, because there are plenty of organizations that are still in that world where they feel they can do... Yeah. It's the same. It's usually the same genre of people that, let's say, 30 years ago were resistant to the idea of a remote control. You can just walk up to the television and press that button. Why do I need a remote control? I will just get fat. They were right. But But still, you know, you got to go with the times. What would be your advice? Because you work with a lot of organizations.
Yeah, so I think there's a few different things. I really liked James' analogy of the net and how, like, there's what you can throw a whole net in or just, like, one line. You're not going to catch as much. But I think it really is dependent. Someone asked me earlier a couple weeks ago about, is this stuff for everyone? Is new media for everyone in every organization? And the answer to that is no. But I think for the most part with organizations, yes. There's just so much opportunity out there. In the same regards, we saw the big net. I've been using this candy bag analogy, like your Halloween trick-or-treat bag. There's so many like opportunities within this bag. You don't have to do them all, but I like James' imagery of the net with all the various social media thing opportunities. And there's new ones every day. You don't have to use them all. You know, discern which one you want to use, which two you want to use. What do you have time for? What do you have a budget for? What do you have expertise for? I think what a lot of the organizations approach and say they just see the whole ocean, or they see that you see this guy over here with like millions of fish, and it's just overwhelming. Versus you can just throw a couple lines in right now and see what happens. You know, please God, we don't catch a shark, but we reap a, you know, we catch something good. That's what I would say. Just yeah.
I would one thing I'd just add to that. I'm not allowed to, but I will. Is that I'll also get to the basis of why they want a website. So what problem they think they're solving with the website, and then what problems they think social will introduce. So if you get to the problem that the website is trying to solve is to communicate in a certain way, I try and get to that source problem they're trying to solve, and then show that how different social networks can help solve that same problem. But get it back to what problem they're trying to solve.
The way I've been going about it, because when I first started, I was kind of pretty early with media, new media, and back in, what was it? Gosh, it was right after my ordination, somewhere in the previous century. I started a Star Wars website, and I got a lot of criticism from my fellow priests and colleagues and parishioners. I was wasting my time, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember my bishop was at the time extremely resistant. He was like, internet media, that's all virtual. We as a church, we are about personal relationships. We want to look people in the eye. In order to kind of change his perspective a little bit, I told him about some people that I'd gotten to know, some, you know, Star Wars fans, that because I was involved in that world as a priest, had rediscovered the church, and actually some of them had even converted. And that was like a personal, kind of almost a proof of concept that, well, wait a minute, it's not all bad. And then one day I just sat down with him with my laptop, and I showed him that you could actually read Thomas Aquinas and St. Augustine online instead of having to, you know, carry lug around all these books. And he was like a kid in a candy store. He's like, oh my goodness, can you find that online? Is that also the internet? And it kind of changed his view a bit. So what I do now is I have very regular talks with my bishop, where I give him examples of the fruits of this work, of this online work, and what is in it for the church, what is in it for our dioceses and our parishes. And fortunately, we now live in this global world where there are so many great examples of how this changes the interaction that we have, and how much it means to people. So I would always show those examples, talk about what works, and that will alleviate some of the fears that people have or the reluctances.
I think to reiterate the call of the new, or the one of the mottos of the new evangelization is just be not afraid. Yes. If you're in this for the church, for the new evangelization, be not afraid. Try. It's just a tool. And again, you can show examples and everything we've suggested so far. But reiterate that part.
Let's talk about some tips as to growing your audience, which might perhaps not be your personal goal, but if you work for an organization and you want to get the word out via social networks, of course you want as many eyeballs as possible. So how can you grow your audience and consolidate that audience so that they keep coming back? It's, you know, and a lot of what we're going to say about this will also apply to growing your parish, growing the church, evangelizing. It's all about these personal connections that Archbishop Porteous talked about, and creating these friendships and that are the bedrock of what we are as a church. Let's take the example of a parish that goes on Twitter. I always encourage parishes, make sure you have a Twitter account. Make sure your name is not too complicated. Some parishes will use acronyms of six letters, and it's like OLVWTRX33506. Yeah, well, that's our postal code in combination with the first five sayings. Keep it simple. but it's a great way for people to be able to get notified of things that are happening in your parish, or to see a picture of First Communion last week. And then, of course, you want as many people as possible to follow that Twitter account. Well, let's kick it off with one tip, and it's a very non-digital tip. Print little cards you put in the back of the church, even hand them out with the parish bulletin, and make sure that it has your, get the latest updates and exclusive insights in the secret life of, that's probably a wrong example, but anyway, tease them, get 30% off that's another wrong example. Yeah, or just do something like for every week, we will pick one of our new followers, and they will get a present or a little surprise or something like that. But incentivize people to that it has extra value for them to follow you on Twitter, and I would say go about it aggressively, because once people are following you on Twitter, usually they will keep following you, and so you have that foot in the door to share what's happening in your parish. What would be tips that you have?
So one thing our parish did, our Lady of Good Counsel in Plymouth, we printed cards out with all the social media. One tip is to create your Twitter handle, your Facebook username, your Instagram name, all consistent, your YouTube name, your YouTube channel name. All those names are consistent. So on the card, it was YouTube.com and then in bold, OLGC Plymouth, Twitter.com and then in bold, OLGC Plymouth. So that's kind of our brand online, is at OLGC Plymouth. One thing Father did, all of our priests did, was during the homilies one week, they talked about the gospel and the new evangelization, and they said, this is the one time, we're going to ask that everyone pull out their phones, and we have an app at our parish, and all of our social media, the podcasts, the weekly bulletin updates, go through our app, which is Our Lady of Good Counsel. And so one weekend, we had the Life, in the United States, I don't know if you have Life Team here. Father asked 30 of the kids to come to every mass, and during the homily asked the kids to get up. It's like everyone's not, he did it very, it was very, very good and very keen. But all the people got out their phone, and anyone who needed assistance, a lot of people didn't know if they had a smartphone.
Cool.
It works on Android. But that was a way to get the word out about it. And people were so excited about all that work. So
I love that idea. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, good.
Another way to increase your audiences, and this is true not just for parishes, but for organizations in general, make sure you get involved with other people in your area of interest. So if you sell rosaries and you see a discussion online about you can screen that. That's what Twitter is great for. You can look for keywords. Mm-hmm. So you just type in a keyword and you'll get I don't know how many tweets about rosaries, and so you might actually reply to some of them that are in your area or mm-hmm. So interact. You can also do that locally in your parish, in your village. There are plenty of people talking about all sorts of things. Why doesn't the parish or one of the ambassadors of the parish engage in those conversations and show that you are interested in more than just the PR for your own interests, but that you are participating in the online social life? That will for many people be kind of like an eye opener. And then do special things, like every once in a while do something high profile. And let's say you all know Shark Week on Discovery Channel, right? Well, you could do something like, Catholic Shark Week. And something that makes journalists go, huh. And you put up a big puppet of a shark and you connect it and people can pose with it. And then you... I'm just making this up right as I'm talking, as you can tell. And you connect that with some story about Jesus
wants us to be fishers of men, and what, like a vocational event. And instead of posting, oh, there is going to be this boring vocational event only for young boys and people that, you know, are eligible to become priests, you can say, hey, it's Catholic Shark Week. Click here. And then, you know, and subscribe to the Twitter feed to get updates and to get the photos. Another idea that I had to help make the hashtag for CNMC of this conference go viral, I was like, you've all seen the Pope's selfie, right? It's the picture that these young people took, like, and the Pope is in there. You know, we have an archbishop in our midst. And some selfies. I think it would work. If I were a journalist, I would totally do, hey, archbishops are picking up on the trend. Well, there you go. We have our first selfie. And I bet you, things like that. Think creatively. Think out of the box when it comes to expanding your reach and getting people to notice you. That's the first element of communication. It starts with them just noticing you, and then you can work on consolidating that relationship. But if you are boring and you never do anything out of, let's say, the rules or what people expect you to do, then, you know, people won't care.
So, again, a tool, back to his point of interacting with people in a space you may not, with the parish, if someone, you know, you can search tweets in a geographic area. Someone writes, oh, I need an oil change really bad. If you know, just tweet to them. Hey, this place over here is really great. You know, yeah. Maybe they're not a parishioner, maybe not. That's a great way to interact and be like, what is Our Lady of Good Counsel? Another thing, if you're going to be writing content, a book that's just helped me tremendously, 3 years old marketing book, I think, it's called Advertising Headlines That Will Make You Rich.
That's awesome.
It's a phenomenal book. Again, it's not just about money by any means, but it's about capturing people's attention. This is really for traditional media, but it works online as well.
Yes.
The author is David Garfinkel. I think the hardback copy is like $40, but that, like, digital, it's 10, I think, on iTunes.
Yeah.
It's called Advertising Headlines That Will Make You Rich. And I think that'll be really helpful if you have a blog. It helps, you know, if you've never had education in like a writing course in a long time, it's kind of like a $10 writing course.
Yeah,
something like that.
Highly recommended.
Yes.
It works.
It's a great
thing. I tried it out.
And one more tool that hadn't gotten mentioned is, it's called Tweepy. It's back to we're talking about Twitter. It's called Tweepy. It helps you search and find people in geographic locations. You can search their bio. You can find, you know, how many followers they are, and all sorts of stuff. They have a free and a paid service, and it's a really great tool that I've used. Tweepy, Tweepi. com.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, to wrap things up, if you want to see some bad examples of what not to do in social media, you can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Ryan, you're Ryan Eggenberger.
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
Yes. And you can't find me on Facebook.
And you can't find him on Facebook. I'm Father Roderick on Twitter. Just Father, one word, Roderick. And on Facebook, it's my full name, which is terrible. My parents were not very PR, or let's say my ancestors were not really aware of the fact that putting an O with two dots on it is a bad idea if you want to be successful in social media. So it's Roderick von Hogan. Roderick von Hogan. But if you follow me on Twitter, I'll eventually spam you also with stuff on Facebook and on YouTube.
I think a lot of the content, my notes anyway, I put in my blog. It's not advertised. It's ryaneggenberger.com/CNMC.
Yeah.
And you're the only ones who have that. So it's...
And my blog is fatherroderick.com, and it hasn't been updated in a year or something like that. So, there you go. I was too active in social media.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate it.
That was Father Roderick von Hogan and Ryan Eggenberger with tips for casting the social media net. The first Catholic New Media Conference Melbourne was held at the Cardinal Knox Centre in the Archdiocese of Melbourne. For more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.